Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Beyond 1%, unleashing your potential against all odds. We have details on an inspiring evening with Brock Mueller coming up next week at St. Andrew's Church. Also this morning, Women of Worth. For 20 years, L'Oréal Paris has been recognizing and honoring extraordinary female nonprofit leaders for their selfless dedication to their communities. And now, they're looking for a new slate of honorees. Trojans wrap up their regular season schedule at Perrysburg before heading into tournament play. We'll get our high school basketball preview. And we have recipes for two from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, February 21st, 2025. We're past the Super Bowl now. We know the Eagles beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, but apparently the NFL has another champion, the Minnesota Vikings. No, they didn't make the Super Bowl. They didn't make the big game. Vikings have never won the big game, but they are the winners of the NFL's fan approval ratings, apparently. The team and their stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, finished first in the NFL's 2024 Voice of the Fan survey, which is based on responses from fans who attended games through the course of the season and rated their satisfaction with things like pregame entertainment, concessions, game day staff, etc., etc. The Vikings set an overall set a record in the overall game day satisfaction category. Set a record for overall game day satisfaction while finishing first in in-game entertainment and earning top five finishes in five of the survey's nine main categories. So you may not be Super Bowl champions, but you're champions in the hearts of the fans. So I don't know if that makes them feel any better, but that is actually kind of cool. Minnesota, the top team for fan experience in the NFL this year. By the way, speaking of the state of Minnesota, we've got another story here out of the North Star State. The state Senate in Minnesota is considering a bill that would, and I think this is something that more states and maybe even the federal government's going to have to deal with. As a matter of fact, I'm a little surprised that this is falling to the states, that the federal government has not addressed this. But the Minnesota Senate is considering a bill that would ban the use of AI technology to alter an image to make a person appear nude. You could not nudify an image under the law. The nudification legislation calls for a penalty of $500,000 for each unlawful access or download of these altered images. So not only would it be illegal to create such images, to possess them or to download them would also carry a stiff fine. The Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee heard testimony yesterday from people warning about the technology. A vote was not taken yesterday. They just had a hearing. The measure could be included in a larger public safety bill in Minnesota. We'll have to wait and see. But this is something that, you know, again, this is another case of technology getting ahead of the law. You know, we have all of these things that we can do, and sometimes the law has to play catch up. I think this is, I mean, I'm not one for excessive regulation, you know, excessive government regulation, but this, I think, does seem reasonable. Now, you can argue $500,000, that's pretty stiff fine, for simply possessing an image that is not real. Maybe it would depend on the age of the person in question depicted in the image. You know, so there is that. And I don't know, according to the story, whether there's any delineation between whether we're talking about nudified images of adults versus children. Obviously, neither is acceptable, but one certainly more unacceptable than the other. But story worth watching there. And I think, like I said, I think more states probably going to have to take that up, probably even the federal government at some point. Let's see what else is going on. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. It is Friday, and that for many people is movie night, right? Well, if you live in Lisbon, North Dakota, you are mourning today because you won't be able to go out to the historic Scenic Theater anymore. What is believed to be the oldest continuously operating cinema in the U.S. is closing its doors after 114 years of showing movies. The owners say they are now ready to retire, and there aren't any new owners who have stepped up to take over the theater, and so they are shutting the doors. It is unclear as to what will happen to the theater now, but the oldest continuously operating cinema in the U.S. And interestingly, it says the Scenic Theater, in 114 years of operation, has only had four owners. Only four owners since it opened in February of 1911. Somebody, please move to Lisbon, North Dakota and save this theater. That's just sad. 114 years, oldest continuously operating cinema in the U.S. closing its doors. Wow. Speaking of something that's rather sad story, and there is a movie connection. You remember the film The Bridges of Madison County, right? Some people love this movie. I personally really did not like the movie, but that be that as it may. And, of course, it was a book before it was a movie. The Bridges of Madison County. But apparently they ain't what they used to be. A new report from the American Road and Transportation Builders Association says that Iowa, where that story was set, Iowa has the worst bridges in the country. It says the state has identified almost 15,000 bridges that are in need of repair. Of the 23,000 plus bridges in the state, roughly 19% are deemed structurally deficient. The worst bridges in the country. Bridges of Madison County. Ain't what they used to be. Kind of interesting. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is one of those stories that make you go, and it says something about where we are as a society. There is a new app called Protector. It offers personal security and a ride to those who use it. According to the profile in the App Store, Protector users can schedule veteran and former law enforcement private security personnel to serve as personal protection whenever it is needed. So far, the service is available just in New York City and Los Angeles. But a promotional video for the app references the death of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson, saying what could have happened. Maybe that assassination could have been prevented had the CEO been escorted using Protector's services. All right. So Protector is the app, provides personal protection services along with transportation. The product manager of the app, Nikita Beyer, describes it as Uber with guns. Uber with guns. This is where we are as a society today. Again, I'm not saying it's positive, negative. I'm not saying there's a good thing or a bad thing. You decide that for yourself. But I think it does say something about our society that we need an Uber with guns these days. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly cloudy today with a high in the mid-20s, partly cloudy tonight with a low in the teens. A new bill making its way through the Ohio legislature calls for higher penalties and potential criminal charges for drivers who pass a stopped school bus.
$300, that is the civil penalty drivers caught passing a stopped bus with its lights flashing could get under Ohio Senate Bill 329 if it's passed. Of that money, $50 would go to a statewide school bus safety fund. The rest would go to the district operating the school bus that caught the violation.
WTOL 11's Tim Miller reporting. Give more on this story on our website. The Tiffin Police Department recognized personnel for their dedication and service in 2024. The 2024 Officer of the Year Award went to Officer Sean Valerie, the chief saying, with nearly 29 years of service, Officer Valerie continues to set the standard for excellence. The 2024 Dispatcher of the Year is Telecommunications Officer Madison Brady, the chief saying, in just over 3 years, Madison has become a vital part of their team. See the full list of awards and commendations in this story on our website. Safety officials say while Lake Erie is much more ice-covered than it was last year, it's still dangerous to traverse.
The Great Lake is about 95% covered, and that's a huge jump from last year's 35%, and the most we have seen since 2018. It is important to note that a fully frozen Lake Erie is very rare.
ONN's Lena Lai reporting. Todd James, executive director of the American Red Cross of North Central Ohio in Findlay, is joining the ongoing Red Cross flood relief operation in eastern Kentucky. Monsoon rains recently hit Kentucky with more than a month's worth of rain affecting the entire state. James will help coordinate efforts with local, state, and federal partners in helping families affected by flooding with their ongoing recovery needs. Get more in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Coming up on Thursday, St. Andrew's Church will be hosting an evening with author and speaker Brock Mueller, whose book, Beyond 1%, Unleashing Your Potential Against All Odds, tells an inspiring story of resilience after a devastating accident that left him with only a 1% chance of walking again, hence the title of the book. Brock Mueller with us this morning. Tell us a little bit about the accident. Share some of your story. What happened?
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris. My accident actually happened, which I can't believe was 16 years ago now, but my family was traveling on Christmas Eve, and a man ran a stop sign. In that accident, my father passed away. My brother Elliot, who was committed to play for the University of Michigan, play football, his girlfriend Hollis passed away in that accident as well. Mm. And I was left with a 1% chance of ever walking again because of a spinal cord injury that I suffered in that accident.
When you first hear that prognosis of 1%, did you immediately say, I'm going to beat those odds, or did it take a while to kind of muster up the kind of determination it would take to overcome what was the more likely reality?
It was an overwhelming thought initially, was that this isn't going to be my future, which of course I, like most people, had no idea what that even meant, to not be able to walk again, to have to use a wheelchair. But yeah, my overwhelming thought was that I would overcome and I would get through that part of the situation. The worst part was that loss of life, something you never replace, but having that 1% chance was just something that I really focused on in my life. And every day after that, I had constant doubts and constant feelings that tried to get me to believe that I wouldn't walk again because mm-hmm. I couldn't feel my legs,
yeah,
because I wasn't able to move my legs. And so it was a constant battle of being told that I wouldn't walk again, that my efforts were going to be fruitless, but having faith and believing that that a miracle would happen.
It's certainly understandable, you know, to have those moments of despair and those times when, you know, is this something that I can really do? Is it, you know, all for naught? What ultimately was the turning point?
It was a multitude of things. I think that something that I think the book does a great job of sharing are these dominoes that fell into place as my life progressed that had me believe these really unexpected moments, and especially unexpected people that stepped into my life that really showed me a path, a different path than the one that was laid out before me by experts. I even had a doctor that told me that my life would be up to me, which is what I really wanted, was not to be told, no matter what you do, this is what your life will be, but that I had a hope of creating something in my, you know, of my future. And so these constant things that I think many of us may look at as coincidences happened over and over again and really made me believe. But primarily it was meeting my brother's strength coach, Mike Barwis, that showed me that there was another path, and that there was, you know, putting our faith in a higher power would lead to something that none of us could have created for ourselves or made happen. And I think that's what really powerful is knowing that what, you know, that we were helpless against just, you know, working through this injury, but that there was, you know, there was this chance of a miracle that could happen. And meeting Mike Barwis and having somebody that had nothing to gain by helping me in such a dire situation really was one of the cementing points of I can change my life.
Yeah.
And that was a powerful moment for sure.
When did you decide, I'm curious, when did you decide to write the book and share this story? I mean, it would certainly be understandable in your situation. It could be very self-absorbed, both in a good way and a bad way. I mean, you know, you can look at that all kinds of different ways. But when did it occur to you that your experience could end up being an inspiration to others?
There was a constant question that was asked, I think, of me of when I'm going to write a book. And really, I knew, as you said, as much as it could be, you know, looking at myself, it was really the story behind it and realizing how many things and how many other people came into place that had things happen for me, not necessarily just, you know, my willpower alone. And that really constantly had people ask me about writing the book. And on top of that, had people come and ask me to share my story, which wasn't something I'm necessarily easily comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But I, over the years, I've seen the power of that, of being able to speak right from my mouth to someone else, to share my story, to say it's not exaggerated or it's not just blown into something else entirely, that I can tell them, here's how I look at my own story. That was something really powerful when I would get feedback from people of what that meant to them.
Yeah.
And I've had that in my life with reading, you know, just a different vehicle for, you know, putting those thoughts out there. And so that's something that I've been working on for a long, long time, and it's made it easier, but I've worked on it for the last year really to get it across the finish line. And I've always wanted the book to match, you know, how great the story was, so that, you know, it'd be all that it could be. And I think with some help, again, that I've been able to do that and again, compile all of the people and all of the different so-called coincidences that fell into place for me to hopefully have people realize what I've come to believe is that, that you know, of where faith can take us, because it wasn't just all these things I did right. And I think people reading the book will realize that
yeah,
there were so many other things that had to fall into place that were far out of my control. And that's always a big fear for everyone is all these things that are out of our control, and how do we deal with them? How do we move forward with them and in a positive way? And I've been able to do that really by just grace, the grace of God, because again, these things came into place for me, and I hope that's what people pull out of the book, is that they can reflect on their own life and see that even in my selfish purpose of wanting to be able to walk again, that incredible things have happened. And really, the thing that's most important to me is the impact it's been able to have on other people, which I don't take credit for. I think that God writing my story has enabled me to be able to be a part of that and be a way to reach people.
Yeah. I won't ask the question that I'm sure you've been asked a million different times. And I always think it's rather trite. You know, did this turn out to be some sort of blessing in disguise? But let me ask you this. Can you imagine what would have been different in your life had the accident not happened? You know, what kind of person that you would be and whether you would have found that same sense of purpose, of depth of faith, that kind of thing?
That really is the big question. And there are times that I consider that. And I feel like the thing that I fear is I don't know that I could be as strong of a person as I am today or as purposeful as I am today without having gone through those things, because certainly I would have loved to avoid so much of the pain and the tragedy that we've been through.
Right.
But it's such a hard thing to, you know, with our human limited minds to try and figure out where would I be otherwise. And I can't sit here and say that I would be as purposeful as I am today without having gone through that. And again, looking at the impact that taking this in a positive stride and taking my life forward in a positive way, all the impacts that I could have possibly missed out on and the moments that I would have missed out on by avoiding those things. And certainly even mistakes I've made along the way of dealing with my situation, you know, I don't know that I'd be the person I am today. I don't know that I would know the things I know. And I certainly don't believe I would have as strong as faith as I do, you know, without having gone through that, without having also experience meeting other people that have gone through, you know, similar situations, because it does give you a stronger connection with those people when they can relate in that way. And so that's been, you know, an important part of getting through the moment, but also I think, again, the way God is able to use it in a positive way.
It will be a very powerful and inspiring evening with author and speaker Brock Mealer. The book is Beyond 1%, Unleashing Your Potential Against All Odds. The event will be on Thursday at St. Andrew's Church. We have more information about that event posted on our website. And where do folks learn more about the book, Brock, and about your work?
Well, it's available on Amazon. And actually, I'm really proud that my brother Elliot was able to actually read the audiobook. So there's also an audio version available on
Amazon. Very cool.
And of course, you can find me on social media or brockmealer.com. And I would just love to connect with people in the hope that, you know, that my words and my story can hopefully encourage and motivate people, you know, towards their own purpose and towards their own passions in life. That's just been an enormous calling for me.
Brock Mealer, thanks very much for taking the time. Certainly wish you continued success.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate the time.
Well, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the L'Oréal Paris Women of Worth program, which has honored extraordinary female leaders in the nonprofit sector who selflessly volunteer their time to uplift and serve their communities. Each year, 10 individuals are named Women of Worth honorees, where they receive funding to support their charitable cause, they get mentorship from the L'Oréal Paris Network, and of course, a national platform to share their story. Danielle Umstead is a Women of Worth 2024 honoree. She is founder and president of the Sisters in Sports Foundation. And Danielle, tell us a little bit about what Sisters in Sports is all about, first of all.
Yes, thank you for having me on. Sisters in Sports Foundation is a nonprofit I founded back in 2020 that celebrates women and girls with disabilities. It's about empowering each woman and each girl with a disability through the love of sport. It doesn't mean you have to be an athlete, but let's get out there, get active, and move our bodies. Our foundation provides mental skills workshops. We provide own your own story workshops, so many different roundtables that support the woman as a whole. And we also provide funding that provides them with financial aid to either get involved in a sport or pursue a sport to a Paralympic level.
That is absolutely terrific. And as we mentioned, this is the 20th anniversary of the L'Oréal Paris Women of Worth program, which you were recognized with in the past year. Talk a little bit about what this program means to you, what it represents for you.
For me, it really represents more than I can even acknowledge. Growing up with a disability, as a woman with a disability, growing up was really hard for me. When I was growing up, being visually impaired was not socially acceptable. So my parents taught me to hide my disability. And until I found sports, I never really knew my own worth. I never knew really who I was. So to receive the honor of Women of Worth 2024 honoree alongside nine other incredible change makers is such a beautiful thing. To say I'm worth it and being recognized by other than L'Oréal Paris, like, is such an amazing honor.
Yeah.
My foundation actually received $25,000, which really elevated our programs and financial aid we're able to provide to our women and girls. And it's connected me with a community that I never knew was out there. It's a L'Oréal network of past honorees and then, of course, future honorees. And then the celebration. There's nothing else like celebrating women and selfless work they're doing through leadership and nonprofit work.
Yeah. Well, actually, that was what I was going to ask about, the way being an honoree has elevated your cause for your organization, for Sisters in Sports, for your foundation. Probably, I would imagine, to heights that you could not have imagined when you first started out.
Right. And it's really to the heights that was unknown. I couldn't elevate myself, myself that much. Like, L'Oréal really shared our story and our mission across so many different platforms and really elevated the foundation's work and elevated our girls and their hard work and really helped us be seen by so many.
Now, obviously, one of the ways that current honorees pay it forward is by helping to spread the word about the L'Oréal Paris Women of Worth program. Nominations are open now. Talk a little bit about the how the program works, how it celebrates the honorees, and how to nominate a woman leader who really deserves to be the next nominee for 2025.
Right. So there's 10 nomination honorees that will receive it in 2025 for the 20th annual anniversary of L'Oréal Paris Women of Worth. I really, really encourage you to reach out in your community and think about those women that are selflessly donating their time, their leadership, and their abilities to a nonprofit. Celebrate that woman or yourself, whether it's you or somebody else. You have until March 8th to nominate this woman in your community. And all you have to do is go to www.womenofwork.com, nominate that woman and help her feel worthy and help her feel seen for the work she's doing in her community.
Is there anything, I mean, what is involved in the nomination process? Just submitting the name, or is there more to it? What do people need to know about the nomination process?
Simple application online. Just go on there, nominate them, and the rest is up to L'Oréal. And
then they take it from there. Again,
Danielle. They take it from there.
Danielle Umstead is Women of Worth honoree from 2024, L'Oréal Paris. She is founder and president of Sisters in Sports. And first of all, mention again the website where folks can nominate someone and follow along to find out who this year's Women of Worth will be.
Yes, www.womenofworth.com.
Okay, very easy.
That website, past honorees, future honorees, and submit an application for the woman that you want to submit it.
Very good. Very easy to remember. And also, while we're at it, where do folks find out more, learn more about Sisters in Sports?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Sistersinsportsfoundation.org.
Okay.
Very simple. Go to that website. You can learn about the work we're doing and the lives we change.
It is amazing work indeed. And again, such a wonderful program, the L'Oréal Paris Women of Worth program. Danielle Umstead, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much and have a great day.
Final Friday night of the regular season for the Findlay Trojans, wrapping up their regular season schedule this evening at Perrysburg before heading into tournament play. Obviously, it's not a secret that this has been a challenging year for a young squad looking to find their footing. All year long, really, it's been a work in progress, and that continues. On the coach's corner this week, John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Ryan Gross.
Last Friday, you finished the home schedule with a 60-34 loss to Napoleon in a cross-divisional NLL contest. Not a whole lot you can say about a game like that, other than the guys just kept fighting.
Yeah, certainly not the focus we needed to start the game. I was disappointed on our effort on the defensive end to get going. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't get to practice for 2 days, so you know, you have a double weekend coming on your schedule, and I told our kids we can't use that as an excuse, but certainly not the focus that we needed. You know, we've said it multiple times throughout the year, you know, a young team that's trying to figure things out, another new situation for us where you play a game Tuesday night and we don't see each other until we walk in the gym on Friday at 3 o'clock to prepare for a game. So the ability to adjust and adapt to be ready to go for that, you know, we weren't. And, you know, got off to a terrible start, really on both ends of the floor, just missed opportunities to put the ball in the hole a couple times, and then just our focus defensively, not what it needed to be. So put ourselves in a huge hole. You know, again, we've been there a couple times this year, and, you know, proud of our guys for trying to continue to get better. You know, you could easily pack it in down 21-2 and just say, we're not gonna get after this. But, you know, we're able to get some things going, play a little bit better on both ends of the floor, and try to improve.
Saturday, it went a fair bit different. Your boys came out hard there at Defiance. You certainly had to be pleased to see your guys go toe-to-toe against a team that is 16-5.
Yeah, it was a good response. We challenged our guys. You know, I challenged them after our game on Friday. That, you know, one, back to what we just talked about, not making excuses for, you know, our circumstance or not being in the gym, and that, you know, we had a choice to go on the road and, you know, go compete like crazy and, you know, focus on the things we control, especially guarding every possession as hard as we can. You know, and our guys did that. I was proud of the way they responded. You know, we were able to come in, get back on the floor that morning and get a good shoot around in. So again, you know, a little preparation helps. Really defended hard. The whole game kind of imploded on ourselves in a 3-minute stretch. And, you know, we've seen that happen in several games this year where we just can't get out of our own way. You know, to right the ship, and you know, and it's a learning process for us. Our guys, you know, I think they're not trying to do wrong, but you know, sometimes you have that mentality like things aren't going right, so I got to go make a play. And you could see there was a couple opportunities there where we were impatient, searching for that 9-point play when it isn't there.
Unlike most other teams, because you're in Division II with many fewer teams than the smaller school divisions, you are playing a regular season game on Friday night. You have to go to Perrysburg to meet a pretty stout Yellow Jacket team. What's it going to take from last Saturday's effort to go into this one?
Well, for us, I think we're going to have to control the pace on both ends of the floor. I think, you know, they really kind of abused us on our home floor when we played the first time around, and we did not handle their size or athleticism very well. And so, you know, we're going to have to try to control the pace a little bit, be a little bit more patient, take the air out of it a little bit, not let them get comfortable, and try to keep them out of rhythm. And then at the end of the day, their size, you know, is a factor that we're just going to have to fight like crazy. If we're forcing them to miss shots, we got to get the ball.
Trojans head coach Ryan Gross with John Marshall on the coach's corner this week. Findlay traveling to Perrysburg tonight, 6:45 will be airtime right here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
An investigation is underway in Boston after a woman woke up alone in a closed bar with no idea how she ended up there. That's how you know that maybe you've had a little too much fun on your evening out. You know what I mean? That's if you wake up alone in a closed bar with no idea how you ended up there, maybe you've had a little too much fun on a Saturday night. The incident in question actually happened all the way back last September, but still an ongoing investigation has yielded no explanation. The woman had called police just after 2 a.m. and reported that she woke up alone inside a bathroom at Ned Devine's bar. She had no idea where she was or how she had gotten there, but she was the only one there. It was closed. Everybody was gone. And she now, initially, they thought perhaps that she had been drugged by a contaminated drink and maybe assaulted and left with no memory of what happened. And obviously, that would be very serious, very unfunny. However, her toxicology report revealed no drugs in her system. So that wasn't what happened. She just ended up in the bathroom of the bar without any recollection of what happened. The management of the establishment says their staff has been retrained to check and clear all spaces before closing. I don't want that to happen again. If nothing else, she's got a story to tell. Let me tell you about the wild weekend I had. Oh, goodness. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is going to be a similar story out of Atascosa County, Texas. I don't know where that is. But three suspects are in custody for reportedly burglarizing a strip club. They're in Atascosa County. Let's see here. After authorities shut the place down, deputies caught three people inside the Pink Monkey Cabaret on Monday night. They say two men were trying to break into the ATM and a third was rummaging through paperwork in the office. Deputies arrested two suspects. The third managed to get away. He is still being sought. They also arrested a woman in a car in the parking lot. With unrelated warrants, deputies closed the club on Sunday night and arrested four people for running an unlicensed, sexually oriented business. So, but nobody deserves to be burglarized like that, whether it's unlicensed or not. So they're still in trouble. Maybe that's what they were figuring. It's an illegal business. It got shut down, so it's free game. No. You can't rob the strip club. I don't know. You rob a, I guess they have the ATM. My thought was people going to the strip club, they don't have any place to put their money. I mean, what? How much can there possibly be? They don't have anywhere to carry their money. Strip club. Moving on. In Baltimore, an Amazon delivery driver is in custody after a hit and run. City police announced that 26-year-old Jerome Young Jr. Actually turned himself in after doorbell camera video showed an Amazon work van striking and running over a female pedestrian around 9:30 on Tuesday night. Wow. Fortunately, the 29-year-old woman, the victim who got struck and run over, suffered non-life-threatening injuries, so she's going to be okay. But Mr. Young is charged with negligent and reckless driving, and police say more charges are pending. I don't know. It's just not a good idea. I mean, if you're in an Amazon delivery truck, that's not exactly inconspicuous. It's not going to be very difficult for the cops to track you down. That's probably why he turned himself in, realizing that probably not going to be very difficult for them to track me down there. Run. Let's see. And a couple of items from the international file. First one here from France, where an unnamed 44-year-old man living in the south of France apparently has lived a full life, career, family, the whole thing, with only half a brain. And not figuratively, literally, only a half a brain. The patient reported feeling a mild pain and leg weakness, went to the doctors, who were shocked to discover that he had a pocket of fluid where his brain was supposed to be. They did a brain scan. They only found half a brain. The brain matter itself was pushed against the rim of his skull. As a baby, the man had a buildup of fluid in his brain, but the cause was never discovered. And despite his unusual condition, the patient had a fairly normal life. Dr. Lionel Fulier says the brain was very, very much smaller than normal. Definitely a unique case in our knowledge. Can you imagine? Talk about. When have you ever said that to somebody? What do you have, half a brain? In this case, yeah, he had half a brain. I didn't even know that was possible. He had half a brain. Maybe I should go get my head scanned. That would certainly explain a lot. And finally, in the broken news this morning, again from the international file, no matter how comfy or stylish they are, you cannot legally claim your Birkenstocks are works of art. That is according to a new ruling by the Federal Court of Justice in Germany, which, according to news reports, has now shot down the shoe company's claim that their famed sandals, their Birkenstocks, should enjoy the same legal protections as movies, music, and paintings. They wanted to declare their footwear, the Birkenstocks, as works of art. Now, you may wonder, how did all of this come up? It's not just them being, you know, overly absorbed with themselves. Birkenstock took legal action to classify their shoes as art in an effort to grant them copyright protections against other companies selling similar footwear. They didn't want anyone selling sandals, just Birkenstocks. However, the court ruled that for copyright protection to apply, there must be such a degree of design that the product displays some individuality beyond simply pure craftsmanship using formal design elements. So no, Birkenstocks are not works of art. You know, a strange case to go all the way to the highest court in the land. You know what I mean? There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Your home for Cleveland Guardians baseball is WFIN.
Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes! A walk-off, two-run home run by David Fry.
Hear a select schedule of spring training games, all leading up to the season opener on Thursday, March 27th at Kansas City. Your home of the Guardians is 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Not a big secret that many Americans are grappling with rising costs and economic uncertainty these days. And a new WalletHub analysis reveals that millions of urban residents are struggling to keep up with their bills, with some cities seeing nearly 90% jumps in the number of people seeking payment relief from their creditors. Southern cities are being hit particularly hard. Houston, Atlanta, and Jacksonville are the top three on a concerning list of metropolitan areas where residents are increasingly falling behind. In fact, all of the top 10 cities on the list are in the South. At the other end of the spectrum, Anchorage, Alaska shows the lowest level of financial distress, followed by Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Cleveland is Ohio's most financially stressed city, according to WalletHub, at number 33 on their list. Columbus just a few spots behind at number 39. Cincinnati is 59th, and Toledo is 88th out of 100. Now, WalletHub used a number of different metrics to compile their list, but I would have to think that if you took a look at the rankings of the cities with the fastest growing cost of living index, they would align pretty well with the number of those cities, especially those in the South. Once again, my wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio this morning with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. And I love this one because if you are empty nesters like we are, you don't have kids, or if you just don't like leftovers. Or if you...
Or a little bit of leftovers, but not a whole lot.
Mean, this is good stuff because it's tough to cook for just two people. I mean, most recipes are designed for a family of four. And so you end up with a bunch of stuff that you end up throwing out, which wastes money, it's waste food, it's not good. So we have a collection of recipes for two this morning. And we
begin for two.
Dinner for two. And we start with a chicken tortellini Alfredo, which is really, really good. We had this the other night.
It was yummy.
Yummy.
So a half a package of store-bought tortellini. I use the frozen. One large chicken breast, salt, pepper, paprika, garlic powder to taste. 1 tablespoon minced garlic, 1/4 of an onion finely chopped, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 bouillon cube, 1 cup of heavy cream, Italian seasoning, basil, pepper, salt, that's all to taste, some olive oil and Parmesan cheese to taste. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. Boil the tortellini according to the package instructions. Once cooked, strain that and set it aside. Season both sides of your chicken with your salt, pepper, paprika, and garlic powder. Sear in a medium pan. I use my iron skillet on medium high for about 3 minutes on each side. And I think the first side was like 3 minutes. The second side, I only did a couple minutes because it was nice. And so just sear that up. And it's okay if it's still pink in the middle. No big deal.
Because you're going to cook it
more. Yeah. You're going to transfer that to oven and bake it for 10 to 12 minutes until golden brown and juicy. And you're going to see some nice, yummy juice on the bottom. Keep that in there. So then in the same pan that you seared your chicken, saute your garlic, your onion, and butter until translucent. Add your bouillon cube, your heavy cream, your Italian seasoning, your basil, your pepper, your salt, and a dash of olive oil. Bring that to a boil, then simmer on medium low. Then after that, sprinkle in your Parmesan cheese as much as you like. And if you don't like... You know, I think I did like about 1/4 cup in mine. Whisk that until it's thickened. Then add your cooked tortellini to the sauce. Mix that well. Slice the baked chicken strips and gently fold that into your Alfredo tortellini mixture and enjoy. And you're going to get really those juices that are in there. Just dump it all in there.
Yeah.
Mix it around. It's good really stuff. Good.
Chicken tortellini Alfredo. And you may actually have a little bit left the next day.
Yes.
But
yeah, I more have enough likely, to take to lunch.
Yeah. More than likely, you're going to get rid of it all that day because you can go back for seconds.
Yes. It's really good.
It's good stuff. Garlic herb croutons, which we also had with the chicken tortellini Alfredo. So you kind of put that in.
I put
with
those
that
on
dish.
Top.
Yeah.
Or if you want to just put it with a salad, you're more than welcome to do that also. This is a half of a large loaf of Italian bread cut into 1-inch cubes. Half a teaspoon of garlic powder, 3/4 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, 1 tablespoon of butter, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. It's going to be the same as your chicken Alfredo. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Place the cubed bread in a large bowl. Sprinkle bread with Italian seasoning and garlic powder. Drizzle melted butter and olive oil on the on the bread. Gently toss to combine. Evenly spread your croutons on a parchment paper lined baking sheet. Bake croutons for about 15 to 20 minutes or until golden and crisp. Remove croutons from the oven. Let cool completely. Sprinkle on top of your favorite salad, or like I said, on top of the tortellini, and it was really good.
Really, really good. Really good. So, let's see here. And then we actually have a couple of other recipes here. One for, and you're doing a salad with those croutons. We have a recipe for your very own homemade Caesar salad dressing.
Yes. Okay. So this is really easy. So it's 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, 1/2 cup of mayo, 1 teaspoon of Dijon mustard, 1/4 teaspoon of dried mustard, 1/2 tablespoon of white vinegar, 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1/4 cup of shredded Parmesan, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, and pepper to taste. So add the first 8 ingredients to a food processor, puree for a few minutes. Slowly add 1 tablespoon of olive oil into the food processor, puree for a few minutes. Turn your food processor off and test the dressing. Slowly add a couple dashes of pepper and another tablespoon or more of olive oil until you get the consistency you desire. If you're fine with that consistency at the first shot, then you're done.
Yeah.
Store in a refrigerator container with a tight lid and consume within 3 to 4 days.
Really easy.
So really easy. Yes.
Homemade Caesar salad dressing. And for dessert, we have a cookie recipe, which this is for 2 big cookies. Talking about dinner for two. Let me tell you, these 2 big cookies are actually probably the size of about 3 or 4 cookies.
Yeah, regular cookies.
So this is...
but it's 2 big cookies.
It's 2 big cookies, but you could probably use this batter to make several smaller cookies if you want.
Like 4 regular cookies, probably. 4 or 5, maybe. Yes.
So the recipe for the 2 big cookies. Yes.
So this is 2 tablespoons of butter at room temperature, 3 tablespoons of brown sugar, 1 tablespoon of sugar, 1 egg yolk only, 1/4 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/3 cup of all-purpose flour, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/4 cup of rolled oats, and 1/4 cup of chocolate chips. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Prepare a large cooking sheet with cooking spray or parchment paper. Add the butter, brown sugar, your regular sugar to a mixing bowl and blend together until creamy. Add your egg yolk and vanilla to the butter mixture. Combine that. Then add the flour, salt, baking soda. Combine and fold in your oats and your chocolate chips. Place in a refrigerator for 20 to 30 minutes to firm up the dough. Divide the dough into 2 large scoops and place on a prepared cookie sheet. Bake 10 to 13 minutes until golden brown. Remove from the oven, let it cool for a few minutes, and enjoy.
There you go. I was actually a little surprised with this recipe that the cookies were as crunchy as they were. I expected them, because they're big and thick, I kind of figured they would be soft, especially in the middle, and they really weren't.
No.
So I don't know if you like softer cookies, maybe baking it a few less minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe that would, but they were really good.
They were really good.
And we had them with Deitch's ice cream.
Yes,
so
we did.
There you go. So dinner for two, recipes for two, the chicken tortellini Alfredo, the garlic herb croutons, and the Caesar salad dressing. And then the dessert recipe for the 2 big cookies are all posted there on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, right? At Kyra's Kitchen, WFIN, on Facebook, if you want those recipes, that's good stuff. And, you know, if you want dinner for more than two, you can just...
Oh, you could double it.
Double the recipe really easy there and make it for the entire family, if you do have a family.
Yes.
But I love recipes for two. Good stuff.
Yes.
My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, Findlay City School Superintendent Andy Hatton will join us to talk about the high-stakes town hall coming up next week ahead of May's critical levy vote. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.